I was asking whether the Old LeGrand High School had enough historic value to maybe have considered saving it, repairing it, even though it might have cost more than a new building.
Well, we don't do things that way in this country. You stop and think. The old Foley Hotel is gone. The new Foley Hotel is gone. Safeway is gone. The LDS Tabernacle is gone. Old St. Joe came along in a later time and it's been reworked to be the county building. We live in a, what shall I say, build them up, tear them, wear them out, tear them down society. We don't think about saving things.
Have you been on discussions where that was demonstrated?
Yes. I was the last agent bishop for the old tabernacle. I wrote letters to the powers that be regarding its status as the oldest tabernacle in the Pacific Northwest. There were people in town who were not members of the LDS Church who felt that it should have been preserved. And we even had the head man of the building department out here going over it. But finally, the decision was made far away from here that it was time to let it go. And there were structural problems.
Yeah, you told about that in your previous interview.
And so,
were there just a few people in town who thought that it had historic value and that made it worth preserving?
Well, let me put it this way. There were several interested non-members that talked to me.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there were members of the board too. It is a historic spot, or was, I should say, as far as the Mormon Church is concerned.
Oh, yes.
In this area.
Oh, yes.
Because at one time, Union State headquarters stretched from Boise, Idaho to Portland, Oregon. And this was where the headquarters happened to be. That lasted for about a year, back about 1901, 1902. But that's, I guess, sort of beside the point. Everything's gone now, anyway. And the high school, back to the high school, in remodeling it, they would have run into the asbestos problem they ran into when they tore it down.
Mm-hmm.
They would have had to replace all of the windows because they were no longer weatherproof. Well, start counting on that.
Yes.
They probably would have had to revise the heating plant. You know, they had the stokers set in that little building. Well, it's kind of in the corner of the L between the part of the high school and the gym. They would have had to probably revise that. All the time I taught there, that school was only closed once because of weather factors, and that's when a lot of snow melted off the field and ran around the corner and filled up the place where the stokers were and put them out of business. It got cold in there and had to go send it home, although we did have to send some kids home when they seemed like bomb threats were the thing there for a while. And we had several in that school and had to send the kids home while we checked things. Of course, there was never anything there at all, idle. But get back to the old times. Before they built the new gymnasium, which was opened in 1936, they surveyed the football field and found, and it was a baseball field too, they found that it was 9 feet lower on the northeast corner than it was on the southwest corner. So that's when they leveled up the field. And of course, in the process of that, the old baseball backstop that was in the northeast corner of the field there, kind of, well, where it, up against 3rd Street where it went through, never was paved, but it's in down in that area. They had to do for that in order to do the leveling. And that was all part of the package with the new gymnasium. I think that's about the time they started burning coal too, because they put the gymnasium in the area where they used to stack the cordwood that went in for that. And when they built that gymnasium, well, it was probably the best one in Eastern Oregon. I don't know how long that lasted, but for a while, anyway.
Did you ever hear any stories about Blue Mountain University?
Only that it was on the site where the old Central School was, and I don't know about that.
No, I think it was farther back.
It may have been. I think Ella Hall and Margaret Adler, who are, I think, aunts of Genevieve Carter. Genevieve might be able to tell you something about it. I don't know. That I know that they had some connection or went there or something. They were neighbors down here with my folks. That's the only way I jumped to that.
Was it your impression that it was truly a college, or was it just an advanced or a high school, in fact?
I have no idea, except I can say this, that my mother went to LeGrand High School and came out of there with a teaching certificate. Now, that'll give you a clue maybe on the other place. I don't think it would be considered anything more maybe than junior college at the most it was.
Yeah. And it was a privately organized institution, I think.
I don't know. Haven't any idea.
Okay.
Well, oh, let's go to mail delivery.
Oh, mail delivery. Well, you told about the roots in your previous interview.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to town. Toots Garrity took care of all the parcel post delivery. And there wasn't any UPS. So he took care of all of the packages that were too big for a route carrier who walked to carry. So that would have been very small packages. He also took the route carrier's mail, which had been bundled and routed in the post office, to drop boxes around town, to which he had the keys, and the city carrier had the keys. And when the carrier had taken a certain amount of his route, then he'd go over to the drop box, and if he had a lot of letters, he'd put them in there for safekeeping while he got the next bundle of mail out and delivered it. David B. Stoddard worked the north side of town, and at one time he had a horse and buggy of a sort to deliver, and people that talked about it said the horse knew the route as well as David B. did, and knew where to stop every time, wait while he did this route. The carriers worked 5.5 days. You had a Saturday morning delivery, which you don't have anymore, I guess, in the city, do they?
Yes.
I don't have any idea. They did all. They walked everywhere. They didn't have any fancy mail cart to take them around any place. And rural routes, well, it was outside the city then, I guess, because a rural route one came in, went down Russell Street, south on Cherry, back out on Z, and on out on Spruce to go on out in the country. And then the other one started on Cove Avenue, about where the Willow Grocery is, a little bit further west maybe, went down Willow Street, caught a big bunch of boxes there where the motel is now, the smokehouse restaurant area, and then went on out. And it finished up coming back in on Cove Avenue, and the people that lived on the north side of Cove Avenue got their mail late in the afternoon, or the one on the other south side got it early. But that was part of rural route then. That's all city delivery now. And of course, the town has added a whole bunch of things. They already told you about the other stuff later, so I'll leave that, I guess.
Okay. You want to talk about the box factory that burned down?
Only thing I know about it is it was located where B&K Auto Salvage is presently, and they had a railroad branch. Well, siding line, I guess you'd say, cut right across Highway 30 in the box factory. It caught fire for some reason back in the early 30s, I would guess about 1931 or 32, because of a big, we could see the smoke from where we lived on Catherine Creek. It all burned down and was never replaced.
What do you know about the kinds of boxes they made and where they got the materials?
Well, I suspect the materials came in on the freight car. I'm not sure, because they have the siding there anyhow for moving materials.
Isn't there a sawmill around here that could provide it?
They may have been able to, because at a later period of time, the Mount Emily Mill over here was making some material. It was about a quarter of an inch thick and about 12 inches high by 14 or so inches long. I think it was, that was a bunch of stuff that went into the sides of suitcases or something. I'm not sure it was what, but I've got some of it. In fact, I made a little filing cabinet out of some of that material. Well, my father-in-law worked at the mill, and when they quit doing that, well, that stuff was surplus. They didn't grind it all up and went, didn't go to park before. As to the use, they used to raise a lot of apples out around Inver.
Mm-hmm.
I was told that at one time the orchards in Inver were sufficient that they loaded up a trainload of apples, took them to Portland, put them on a ship, and ended up taking them to England. Somebody have to check the accuracy of that, but...
Well, I think that is generally accurate.
There were a lot of orchards out there.
Yep.
And Lynn Wilson was probably the last apple orchard man that lived out there. And they still had scattered groups of trees here and there. Although, by the time I knew anything about it for sure, there were more cherry orchards out that way than apples by far. But I think the reason they quit, apples is a labor-intensive crop.
Oh, yes.
And they found they could make as much money growing grain and hay. And
more.
And then, of course, after World War II, they hit it big with grass seed, and H.L. Wagner put up the cleaning plant in Embler, and they all used to do that with a binder and wagons, thrashing machine, and so on. And now they swath it and run a combine in the fields. And you don't have those grass stacks around like you used to.
Do you recall what this box factory was called?
That's the only thing I ever knew it by, was box factory. You got to remember, I wasn't but about maybe 10 years old when it burned down. I was that old.
Had you been inside it?
No. We just went past it when we went out where we lived.
I think you mentioned previously that you knew about the vinegar works that was near on Willow Street.
I was located where the city garbage plant is
right
now. Yeah,
you smelled it. What else did you know
it
about
was,
it?
It was pretty strong because the kids that lived over south of the railroad track, like on Highway Avenue, which is now about 18th Street, I think, and in that area, had to walk past it to get to Willow School, and they had enough vinegar made that it smelled pretty strong, and I don't know when that disappeared either.
Did you see or use the product?
You'd have to ask my mother. I don't know. I'm not very strong on drinking vinegar, even though that's supposed to be good for you nowadays. It was there for some time, and it's just like some of the other businesses that once were good businesses, that, you know, they're not there anymore, one reason or another.
Now, there was a flour mill near there, too. You must have seen that. The Alliance Flour Mill?
Yes, and if you want to know about the inner workings of that, you're going to have to see my brother, because he worked there.
Oh, he did?
He worked at that flour mill. He worked in the Allen City one. He worked in the one in Allisell. He worked in the one in Inver for Kittles when he was a kid going to college. And then after he was married, too, I think. He can tell you about the interworks and all that.
Did he operate the machinery?
That's what he was there for, yes. He can tell you all about it.
You'd call him a miller?
No, because he didn't grind.
Well, what did he do?
He took the grain in,
Weighed
it in, saw that it got in the proper bins or silos, whatever you wanted to call them, and gave the tickets out to the farmers or whoever was doing the hauling for them. But that, no, let me see. A fellow named Schaefer that lived out on Hunter Lane at one time was the last miller that I knew out here in Iowa City. That's a long ways back. But he worked in all those places and ran them all, and he can tell you about it. My only experience was delivering grain there a time or two and hauling screenings away a time or two, and I didn't have anything to do with it. So
hauling what away?
Well, when you haul your grain in, unless you got a real clean crop, they separate it, run over separator. But like if you got wild oats going in your grain, well, they can separate the wheat from the oats or the wheat seed, whatever. And so you'd get some of that back sometimes.
So you'd have to haul it away yourself.
Yeah. They wanted you to.
Would they deduct that from whatever the money they gave you?
Well, they weighed your load in, see, yeah. And all the stuff's in the load. Yeah, you get subtracted for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why were you bringing wheat in? I didn't know.
Because I was growing wheat down here. We own the place down there where the trailer courts are. In fact, when you make the corner down here and turn on West Road to go out,
yes,
to Riddle, my dad and mother and I owned everything from there to the railroad track at one time. We bought that in 1948, farmed it for a while before my dad died, and we kind of went out of the farming business and then sold off bits and pieces of it here and there. Put me out of business. Mm.
Were you thinking of being a farmer yourself at that time?
No, we just had the land and he'd use it.
Mm-hmm.
No. I had to teach school and make a living so I could afford to farm.
I see, yeah. You mentioned that your father was killed. Was it an accident?
That was my grandfather.
Or your grandfather?
No, my...
A farming accident?
No, he was logging out in... it was out there on the Foothill Road, up above the area where they feed the deer and the elk when they do that occasionally. It was up on top somewhere. And my dad was working right next to him, and it stopped for lunch, and somebody let a tree hang up, and it came down and hit him. Didn't leave a mark on him, but it was fatal.
Mm.
And that was in 1913, and the two older ones, older than my dad in the family, had married. My dad was the oldest single son that was left, kind of had the responsibility of looking after the family for a while, and in fact he didn't marry for the next 10 years. Well, I should take that back, the next 7, he was married in 1920. I know the general area. I don't think anybody knows the exact spot because all of them are dead or gone. One of Walt Smoot's uncles, I went with Walt one time and he talked to us about it. I can't remember which one it was. I know where the place was now, but he remembered seeing him come by after the accident, that sort of thing. No, my dad went into the Grand Clinic, had a complete physical, and the doctor told him he was good for another 20 years, and he lasted long enough to get down to the old post office and sign a pay voucher, and that's where he died that day.
The day of the physical?
The day of the physical.
The doctor missed something?
Well, probably, but it was something that an EKG or whatever it was wouldn't tell you. Gene says that's only good if you're having a heart attack, right on the spot.
Yeah.
Otherwise it gives you a clear reading.
Yeah.
You know, what happened was that somewhere back along the line in his activities or whatever, apparently it weakened chamber of the heart, and when he got down to the post office, it took occasion just to rupture. The doctor couldn't have done a thing for him. He'd have been right on the spot. And I was when Lloyd Walsh was working at the clinic, and he got the word and came down and got me, or I came to school and got me, and I guess he told Harvey what the situation was, and I went down to the post office, and I'm the only one that saw my dad in the postmaster's office with a catalog for a pillow. And I I knew which mortuary, and I had him out of there before my mother, my brother, and the rest of them ever saw that.
Mm.
Let's see, what didn't we cover? Oh, football. Always, in those days, we played Baker on what was Armistice Day. And it didn't matter whether the snow had been pushed off the field or what it was. I know we went to Baker one time, and the snow drifts on the side of the field where they pushed it off the field was about 3 feet deep.
Are you talking about the time when men who were 26 years old were still allowed to play football with high school
players? I'm talking about the time when I played.
Or when you played.
But if you go back a while, yeah, I can tell you stories about that if you want to hear it. But
well, when you were playing football, there were older men.
No.
No?
No, I think they'd cut the limit down to about 18 by then.
Why did you want to play football with a team?
I don't know. I guess I was crazy enough to want to do it.
Did you realize that injury was likely?
Yes, but that isn't what broke my nose. I didn't get any injuries out of that like some of them did. But to go back in ancient history, back when my Uncle Jeff was in high school, he had a denatured skunk that he'd take along with him, and he traveled with the team.
The mascot?
I don't know if he played or not. Yeah, it was sort of the mascot. Mm-hmm. They never
you,
had
you
any...
You call it denatured, huh?
Well, he'd been treated so the scent was no longer quite so strong. Anyhow, as long as he took Neewa along, they never had any difficulty up in Baker. There were never any fights or anything. There were fights at a later time, because when I was going to high school, there was another kid in high school that had a suit, a little hand satchel he took along with his fighting clothes in. And he's usually getting a fight with somebody up in Baker, out behind a billboard somewhere or something. This was 1938 and 1939.
What a fighting clothes look like?
Well, I don't know. I never did get in on one of these fights, or didn't see it. I suppose something that was ragged enough that if it got torn up, it wouldn't make too much difference. It wasn't as nice as what he usually wore anyway.
And you said when you went along, there weren't any fights? Why?
I said when my Uncle Jeff went along, there weren't any. He had the skunk, remember?
Oh, well, I see. He used it as a threat?
A protective device, okay. Let's call it.
Your Uncle Jeff is the one who was called was named Jesse, but he didn't like that name.
He never went by it if he could get out of it.
No. Did most of the guys who played football at that time think it was a macho thing to do? I mean, was your manliness at stake there?
Well, I don't think so exactly, because Jack Ferguson was a starting guard his senior year. He weighed 137 pounds, and he was good enough that when they made the selection for the Blue Mountain All-Star team or whatever, he was selected in 1939.
I bet he ran fast.
Well,
slippery.
He was slippery, I guess,
yeah.
Because they couldn't block him out or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I don't think it was too macho a thing. The biggest kid we had weighed 205 pounds, and he didn't play first string.
Mm.
Now he'd get clobbered maybe now, but he didn't play. He never started the game or anything.
I suppose football players, though, were admired around the high school.
Well, you got a letterman sweater to wear, you know, and you got a stripe on the arm for this year, or whatever. Some of those guys had four stripes before they graduated from high school.
Mm. Can you describe team spirit?
Well, I think it must have been pretty good because we went undefeated in the state, I think, in 1939. They didn't have any playoffs, though. So we didn't get to go across the state anymore.
Mm.
But, there was a lot of rivalry. Baker, we played Baker twice a year then, once early in the fall and once in August. And Pendleton, like we beat him once here in Le Grand in the snowstorm, and the other time we played the 0-0 tie in the roundup grounds in Pendleton. And that's the year when they didn't make a yard on the punt return because Marion Huff nailed everybody down there right after he got the ball. But I don't know. We even played the Dalles. That was something to ride down there on the school bus over the old road at about 35 miles an hour.
Yeah.
In fact, coming back from one night down there, the next day, I put a peanut on the outside of the bus window, and that peanut stayed on there and rode all the way back to about Meacham. I'll give you an idea how fast we weren't moving.
Describe the coaching.
Well, Cease Sherwood.
Cease?
Cecil.
Uh-huh.
Later on, he was a grade school principal down in Roseburg. And Harold Hoyt was the assistant coach. And Harold Hoyt was on the school board down there and helped Cease get the job later on. But he coached a, what should I say? I guess you'd call it a single wing, maybe. Moved the left tackle over so he had two tackles in offense side by side. Your quarterback handled the ball on every play. He wasn't up under the center. He was back here. And defense, he played a six-man line, two linebackers and two halfbacks and a safety. And
how much emphasis on sportsmanship?
I think on occasion there wasn't any.
Do whatever you need to do to knock them down?
I shouldn't even mention it on tape, because I heard the coach tell Pee Wee Marshall what to do one time. I don't think Pee Wee managed it, but it was laid out there for him if he could. And Pee Wee was big enough and tough enough and fast enough that if the occasion had opened up, he probably could have done what the coach wanted him to do.
Well, would it be accurate to say that generally coaches, or football coaches anyway, were suggesting to the team, you do whatever you need to do, win at all costs?
No, because...
bend the rules?
If you've got to bending the rules, you got to remember, you got about three referees out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a head linesman as well as the others. They're watching for this stuff.
Yeah. Did the coaches cuss out the players in the locker room?
I don't remember that it was ever done. I'm not saying it wasn't, but if it was done, it wasn't aimed at me anyhow.
Well, did you have the impression the coach was pretty tough?
The coach wanted to win, sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, he wasn't afraid to call a spade. He wasn't a very big guy, but that didn't bother anything. I don't recall any swearing going on. There might have been some, but like I say, I was a minor matter, so it wasn't aimed at me.
Well, no, but you could pick up what was going around at the time. I suppose for most of LeGrand High School's history, winning in sports has been very important.
I would say that that's probably right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe more important than the academic part?
They have never cut sports. I have seen them cut orchestra, foreign language, juggle other things around.
Is this probably because the coaches and the administrators think that the community values sports so highly that they would be outraged if there were reductions in teams?
Well, maybe, but I've seen them do the same thing to them, where I know the fellow whose music job they cut.
Yeah. Well, I think if that was the attitude, it probably was the same attitude in all the high schools around here.
I think probably.
Communities tend to.
In fact, I can go further and say, I know the fellow who was a star athlete for Baker High School. He lives up in Enterprise now. The coach did all kinds of things to keep that guy eligible to play. Now, I know LeGrand High School on the bulletin board. there was a place where the athletes had, the teachers had to sign off as to whether you were eligible for that game or not. And there were two or three guys that lived in fear and trembling from about Wednesday on until they got cleared on Friday.
Now, do you mean students or teachers?
I mean students, because the teachers had the sign.
I know, but there was a lot of pressure on the teachers, too.
I don't know. There might have been. Well, I don't know. We pretty much covered the page, I think.
Okay. Any random thoughts?
Yeah, random thoughts. Well, the shoeshine parlor was run by Angel Mitsopoulos.
Angel Mitsopoulos.
Mitsopoulos. His daughter, Ann, Aunt Rodriguez, lives over on Black
Hawk Trail. Oh, yes. Yeah. She was a teacher at the high school,
yes.
Or maybe still is.
No, I think she retired. Mm-hmm. Well, she went out along with the rest of them due to this PERS thing that's mm-hmm. kicking around now.
Mm-hmm.
But she might remember something about it. And Ada is still alive, and she lives over on Fur, across the street from what used to be the Hendricks Methodist Church. Incidentally, that was another location of the grocery store where she
mm-hmm.
lives.
Mm-hmm.
But, and she... I don't know what she is, 90-something? And she's still putting it on Louie, her son-in-law, to get in there and get that garden cultivated so she can get out a plant garden. Ann can tell you what that woman put in. I don't know, something like 100 onions or something maybe last year. And I don't know what else.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Tell me more about the shoeshine parlor.
Well, I remember that it was a combination shoeshine and hat blocking deal. Don't ask me what they did with the hats. I don't know. But, you know, shoeshine, he had several different stations, and they're all up here raised on, you know, raised seats,
yep.
So the shoeshiner doesn't have to bend over, and the little shoe trees or whatever these things are
yep.
out here for you to put your feet on. And I don't remember what it cost or anything, but it was right in there close to what once upon a time was a location for an A&W root beer thing. I don't know if anybody remembers about that either.
The custom of most men who were in business downtown was to dress up quite a bit every day, wasn't it?
Well, it runs in my mind that Homer Leffel usually wore a suit and a tie, heavy pants. And I think that John Group and Les Keffer were dressed either in a tie, maybe, and suit at least part of the time for trotters. Zion's I don't remember about.
Well, when you saw men on the street, if they worked downtown, were most of them wearing suits, white shirts and ties,
okay,
and shiny shoes?
Don't put me on record for that. I don't know.
No, there was more than one shoeshine parlor, so somebody had to be patronizing.
Yeah. I guess it did. Of course, you had barbershops scattered all over town, too.
Yeah.
Sacagawea and a lot of other. Well, they moved. They floated sometime when they had to move.
You patronized them, didn't you?
Yeah, once upon a time. In fact, you used to get a haircut for about a quarter.
Yeah. What do you remember about conversations in the barbershop?
I don't remember much of anything. Because my brother-in-law, who was a barber, moved back to town, and when he did, he started cutting my hair, and that lasted for quite a long time until he got to where he couldn't do it anymore. And then my wife signed me up, so I got one of my former students cutting my hair now.
My memory of barbershops, the old kind, is that it was always men in there. You never saw
yeah.
any women. And that you could get two-bit opinions on politics or just about any
just
subject.
About any subject,
yeah.
yeah.
And, of course, a lot of men were waiting in chairs.
Well,
so the conversation was among several people.
Oh, and I remember, you know, they used to shave a lot of fellows, too.
Yes.
They'd always hot towels.
Yes.
And... let me see, they finished up with Witch Hazel or something like
that's
that.
That's right.
Whatever it was, yeah. And it was always this big bunch of all kinds of colored hair on the floor that they sort of sweep aside until they really cleaned up at the end of the day.
Do you remember the kind of clippers they used on your neck?
Well, the first kind were these that, you know, you operated by hand. Then they got the electric ones later on. Of course, they used to shear sheep with hand tools, too, before they got the electric.
Do you remember how the hand-operated clippers felt?
If they got the least bit dull, they pulled.
Yeah. On just about every stroke. Was there cigar smoking in those barbershops? Cuspidors? Or chewing tobacco?
Yeah, I suppose there was, but I don't remember for sure. Good night, I hadn't been to the barber shop for 20 or 25 years, probably.
Well,
like that.
The recent ones, of course, wouldn't be like that.
No, they went out pretty fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I think you've run me dry.
Okay.
At least for this point, anyhow.
Sure.